Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I am now in Numbers chapter 14. I'm going to cover verses 25 through 45. I'm going to call this section of Scripture, Israel defeated by the Amalekites and Canaanites. Our context is this. In the first half of Numbers 14, verses 1 through 24, we see the Israelites rebelling because of giants in the land when they received the bad report from the 10 spies. So we start now in chapter 14, verse 25. Now the Amalekites and the Canaanites live in the valleys. Turn tomorrow and set out to the wilderness by the way of the Red Sea. Now this is God talking to the Israelites through Moses. And God is saying, look, you can't keep going north here. Where were the Israelites? They were at the northern end of the wilderness of Paran, which is right from the tip of the Gulf of Aqaba, maybe halfway up to the Dead Sea. And then when you got the wilderness of Zin, which is somewhere in the middle of that area between the Dead and the Red Sea, going up to the southern portion of the Dead Sea, and then the Negev Desert was to the north of that. So when it says the Amalekites and the Canaanites live in the valleys, Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown say that where that is on the other side of the Idumean Mountains. That's the Edomite Mountains, southern tip of the Dead Sea. On the other side of those mountains there, at whose base they were encamped. So in other words, they're somewhere in that desert, and on the other side of the mountains, you got some bad guys, and God's saying you can't get through them, so go back and go by the way of the Red Sea. If you look at the map, basically, they're doubling back now towards where they came from. They're going back down toward Eilat at the Gulf of Aqaba. The NIV note points out the Red Sea is really Yam Suf, that is the Sea of Reeds, because the Sea of Reeds, wherever it was, nobody knows, is a part of one of those gulfs, either the Suez Gulf or the Gulf of Aqaba. So, I mean, it could be they're heading back toward the Suez Gulf for all I know. But the Sea of Reeds is part of the Red Sea, so Red Sea is short for Sea of Reeds, or Sea of Reeds is short for Red Sea. It's the same thing. It's a part of the Red Sea. At any rate, they now have to double back. Now they're going to start wandering around in the wilderness because of their sin. Now, who are these Amalekites? We'll read you a little bit from Easton's Dictionary. They were a tribe that dwelt in Arabia Petraea. Arabia Petraea is the area between the Dead and the Red Sea, in the Arab Gulf there and to the west of it, as you head over toward the Mediterranean Sea and south toward the Sinai Peninsula. The Amalekites were a tribe that dwelt there between the Dead and the Red Sea. They were a tribe that attempted to stop the Israelites when they marched through their territory, when they attacked the Israelites at Rephidim. We told that story at Exodus 17, 8 through 13. If you recall, Joshua fought that battle for the Israelites. He won it because Moses kept his arms up. And Aaron and Hur kept his arms up. When his arms went down, the Amalekites started winning. When Moses' arms went up, the Amalekites started losing. And finally, about 450 years or so later, during the monarchy, Saul finally desolated their territory, destroyed their power. This is, and remember, Agag was their leader. The kings of Amalekites were called Agag. Saul was supposed to kill Agag, and he didn't do it. And Samuel says, what? And no, he's supposed to kill the sheep. And he didn't kill the sheep. I remember correctly, I don't even think he killed the king either. I just looked it up. He didn't kill the king. And Saul rebuked him for it. So the Amalekites show up a good bit, so we will keep them in mind. They're always enemies of the Israelites. The Canaanites are the native people that lived in the land of Canaan. That term is either general for all the Jebusites and the Hittites and the Amorites and all the Ites, or sometimes it's a particular Canaanite tribe, the Canaanites, either Canaanite proper or Canaanite in general. But at any rate, I think it's just in general here. These were the bad guys, and so now Israel has to go back. John Gill's got this interesting idea that the Canaanites are Amorites who are in the hill country, Deuteronomy 1:19. Then we set out from Horeb, that's Mount Sinai, and went through all that great and terrible wilderness which you saw on the way to the hill country of the Amorites. That's the Arabia Petraea desert between the Dead and the Red Sea that I just told you about. They went on the way to the hill country of the Amorites, just as our Lord had commanded us, and we came to Kadesh Barnea. So Gill says it's a contradiction because it says that the Canaanites / Amorites are in the hill country, but our verse here in verse 25, Numbers 14, says that they are in the valleys. Well, Gill says the Amorites lived in the hill country, but they left, went to the valleys to set up an ambush. I don't think so. You can live in a valley and still be in a hill country. You just live in the valley in the hill country. So that's I probably shouldn't have even mentioned that, but Gill said it, so I thought I would too. We go down to Numbers 14, verses 26 through 29. The Lord spoke to Moses and Aaron, saying, how long shall I bear with this evil congregation who are grumbling against me? I have heard the complaints of the sons of Israel, which they are making against me. Say to them, as I live, says the Lord, just as you have spoken in my hearing, so I will surely do to you. Your corpses will fall in the wilderness, even all your numbered men, according to your complete number from 20 years old and upward, who have grumbled against me. Now, before God had only been speaking to Moses, this is at the door of the tent of meeting, but now he's speaking to Aaron too. Aaron is now brought into it in verse 26. And verse 27, he says, how long am I going to put up with this congregation who is grumbling against me? Well, in verse 2, they were grumbling against Moses and Aaron. But that's the same thing as grumbling against God, because Moses and Aaron were God's appointed leaders. I guess I should go back and read verse 2 for you. Verse 2 says this, all the sons of Israel grumbled against Moses and Aaron. But they're really grumbling against God because they grumbled against God's appointed authority. Now in verse 28, God says, say to them, as I live. Now that as I live might seem innocuous, but actually it's an oath. As I live. I guess God can't say strike me dead if this isn't true, because you can't strike God dead. So he just says, as I live. In other words, of course I live, and therefore it's true. It's an oath. If I'm living, this oath is going to happen. And what's going to happen? Just if you have spoken in my hearing, so I will surely do to you. Well, what had the sons of Israel said in God's hearing? Well, back in verse 2, the first half of which verse I just read to you, Numbers 14:2, all the sons of Israel grumbled against Moses and Aaron, and the whole congregation said to them, would that we had died in the land of Egypt, or would that we had died in the wilderness. Well, guess what? They're going to die in the wilderness, because God said, just as you said, may it happen to you. I will surely do to you what you have spoken. You said, may you die in the wilderness. I will give you your wish, rebellious Israelites. Your corpses will fall in this wilderness, even all your numbered men, verse 29. Now, let's look at this numbered men. The numbered men from Numbers 146, we see, were 603,550. That's the first census. Now, the people who are going to fall in the wilderness, there's a little bit of discussion about that. So let's see who's exempted. First of all, in that first census, the Levites were accepted because they were not martial people. They were priests. So they're not going to fall in the wilderness because they were not numbered. And God said that the numbered men would fall. The Levites weren't numbered, so they're safe. Now, we know that Eleazar the priest, he didn't fall. He was a Levite anyway, so he didn't fall because he wasn't numbered. But he's also mentioned in Numbers 34, verse 17. These are the names of the men who shall apportion the land to you for inheritance. Eleazar the priest and Joshua. So Eleazar was helping divvy up the land when they got into the promised land, so he made it. We see that also in Joshua 14:1. Now, these are the territories which the sons of Israel inherited in the land of Canaan, which Eleazar the priest and Joshua the son of Nun apportioned to them for an inheritance. All right, so we know Eleazar made it. Now, also, all the numbered men will fall. Well, the women weren't numbered. They weren't men either. So that means no women fell in the wilderness, I suppose. I've got a good article here by a gentleman named Wayne Turner, who has some very good arguments that the Levites and the women did not fall in the wilderness. And I believe that that's probably true. So we got the Levites, we got the women. How about the people who were not numbered, namely the people under 20 years old, the men who were under 20 years old? Not to mention the children, both the girls who were under 20. Well, girls, whether they're girls or women, doesn't matter how old they weren't numbered. So they apparently made it into the promised land. The Levites made it. We go down to Numbers 14, verses 30 through 34. Surely you shall not come into the land in which I swore to settle you, except Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, and Joshua, the son of Nun. Ah, here's another exception. Two exceptions. Caleb made it, and Joshua made it. Now, Caleb was from the tribe of Judah, and Joshua was from the tribe of Ephraim. So they were numbered. But there's an exception there, because they were spies that gave a good report. Verse 31. Your children, however, whom you said would become a prey, I will bring them in, and they will know the land which you have rejected. But as for you, your corpses will fall in this wilderness. Your sons shall be shepherds for 40 years in the wilderness, and they will suffer for your unfaithfulness until your corpses lie in the wilderness. According to the number of days which you spied out the land, 40 days for every day you shall bear your guilt a year, even 40 years, and you will know my opposition. Now in verse 30, we see Caleb mentioned before Joshua. You're not going to come in the land except Caleb and Joshua. Nothing is to be inferred from the fact that Caleb is mentioned before Joshua, as Gil said, because in another place, verse 38 in our chapter here in just a little bit, Joshua is mentioned before Caleb. So we need to be careful. I mentioned that because a lot of feminists, some of my favorite people, say that Priscilla was leading Aquila because her name is mentioned before Aquila. And all you got to do is find another place in the New Testament where Aquila is mentioned before Priscilla in the book of Acts. And what have you proved? Absolutely nothing. Now, God mentions in verse 31, your children, however, whom you said would become a prey. What God is referring to there is verse 3 in this chapter, chapter 14. This is what the people said. Why is the Lord bringing us into this land to fall by the sword? Our wives and our little ones will become plunder. Would it not be better for us to return to Egypt? So that's the reference to plunder or prey, depending on how you translate it. Same thing. And so God said, well, you predicted something. I'm going to make it come to pass just like you said. He mentions in verse 32 something he's already mentioned. He says, but as for you, your corpses will fall in the wilderness. A little repetition for emphasis there. Now in verse 33, God says that you are going to be walking around as shepherds. Your sons shall be shepherds for 40 years in the wilderness. Why 40 years? He says, according to the number of days which you spied out the land, which was 40 days, as we know from a previous chapter, I think it was last chapter, 40 days to spy, 40 days in the wilderness. Now, the first thing I ask myself is, why the connection? What's the connection? I think, I found the pulpit commentary agreed with me on this, is that it's an object lesson. The next time Israel or Israelites think about them having to wander around in the desert for 40 years, they might say, why 40 years do we have to be in the desert? And then the answer will come, because the spies spied out for 40 days and they gave a bad report. They didn't trust God when God gave a promise for the land. So this is what happens when you don't trust God. You end up wandering around in the wilderness. Great teaching lesson, great object lesson. Now, verse 33, it says, your sons shall be shepherds for 40 years in the wilderness. Again, that 40 years is actually not, that's a round number. They took a year to get to Sinai. They took another 2 months to take off. Then there was a month of eating quail. That's 3 months. And then there was some other, trying to think. Well, here, I've got it written down here. Let's just go. Nisan 1, year 2, the tabernacle is built. Iyar, year 2, that's the second month in the second year. That's when all the tribes gave gifts to the tabernacle. So now we've got 13 months before the wandering in the wilderness. And then Iyar 20 in the same year 2, the Israelites left Sinai. So that's almost another month, 20 more days. So we're now roughly 2 months past 1 year before the wilderness wandering start, and then they had 1 month eating quail. So now we're 3 months past 1 year. Oh, the other 40 days that took the spies 40 days to spy, that makes up for the 20 days in ER, the last 10 days in ER that they took off. So the spies took 40 days to spy. So now there's 4 months past 1 year. So they basically, before the punishment of wandering around in the wilderness was executed, they'd already spent 1 year and 4 months. So you got to take that 1 year and 4 months out of the 40 years when you say precisely how long the Israelites wandered around in the desert. It was about 38 years and 6 months, roughly. 38 years and 8 months, roughly. So let's just say 38 to 39 years, 38 and a half years they wandered around in the wilderness, not exactly 40. We know that the Israelites at the very end of their wandering had been in the wilderness for 40 years. But it was 40 years not from the time of leaving Sinai, but from the time they left Egypt. We read that in Numbers 33, verse 38. At the Lord's command, Aaron the priest climbed Mount Hor and died there on the first day of the fifth month in the 40th year after the Israelites went out of the land of Egypt. So 40 years from Egypt, but then you got to knock out that 1 year and 4 months to get them a more precise number. Not that it really matters. Just remember 40 years. Now notice in verse 33 that the text says, your sons shall be shepherds for 40 years in the wilderness, and they will suffer for your unfaithfulness. Well, now, isn't that interesting? The sons didn't do anything unfaithful, but they suffered. And that just proves a sad fact of human existence. We are not individuals. I don't care if you're American. You're not an individual. You suffer what your parents do, and your kids suffer for what you do. And here, these children had done nothing. They weren't the ones complaining about the giants in the land. Their parents complained, and they suffered. But now, they weren't killed. But they did have to wander around the desert for 38 years, and they had to die in the wilderness. Now, verse 34 says that you'll bear your guilt a year. For every day you shall bear your guilt a year for a day, 40 years, 40 years in the wilderness. And you will know my opposition. Now, that word opposition is kind of interesting. Adam Clark says it should be translated vengeance. The NIV says it should be translated what it is like to have me against you. You're going to know that. The Holman Christian Study Bible says, my displeasure. Now, there's one translation. It's even harsher than vengeance, and I've lost it. But at any rate, the point is that Hebrew word there just means you got to know what it means for me to be displeased with you. Not necessarily vengeance or revenge. We go now to Numbers 14, verses 35 through 38. I, the Lord, have spoken. Surely this I will do to all this evil congregation who are gathered together against me. In this wilderness they shall be destroyed, and there they will die. As for the men whom Moses sent to spy out the land and to return and made all the congregation grumble against him, against Moses, by bringing out a bad report concerning the land, even those men who brought out the very bad report of the land died by a plague before the Lord. But Joshua the son of Nun and Caleb the son of Jephunneh remained alive out of those men who went to spy out the land. Now, we'll notice that the 10 spies who gave a bad report, the instigators of the rebellion, they got their judgment immediately. They died of a plague. Bang. They don't get to wander around for 38 and a half more years. They're just going to die. But those who listened to them had 38 and a half, 39 more years more in the desert before they died, according to the NIV Study Bible. So they got their wish, so often expressed. It's Exodus 16:3. The sons of Israel said to them, "Would that we had died by the Lord's hand in the land of Egypt when we sat by the pots of meat." Well, they ended up dying by the Lord's hand. It wasn't in Egypt. It was in the wilderness, but they got what they wanted. The bad report that's mentioned right here, it's called a very bad report. That is recorded in the last chapter, Numbers 13, verse 28. "Nevertheless, the people who live in the land are strong," said the 10 spies, "and the cities are fortified and very large. And moreover, we saw the descendants of Anak there." Anak, of course, is a race of giants. Numbers 13, 31, "But the men who had gone up with him said, 'We are not able to go up against the people, for they are too strong for us.'" Total unbelief. Now, there's a question of whether they deliberately falsified their account or whether they just exaggerated out of fear, just lack of faith. I tend to think they probably just had a lack of faith. Not that they were crooks or dishonest. Now, I've got a great quote here from John Gill. In verse 37, it says, "The 10 spies died of plague." Well, the Jews, who have a remarkable imagination, the rabbis, this is what they said about this plague. This is brought to us by John Gill. Quote, "The Jews differently relate the manner of their death. Some say worms came out of their navels and up to their jaws, and ate them and their tongues. And others that they, the worms, came out of their tongues and entered their navels, which they take to be a just retaliation for sinning with their tongue." In other words, they have a disagreement on which way the worms went, either from navel to the tongue or from the tongue to the navel, but they got eaten up. Now, of course, that's not scriptural, that's not canonical, but it is interesting. We go now to Numbers 14, verses 39 through 41. "When Moses spoke these words to all the sons of Israel, the people mourned greatly. In the morning, however, they rose up early and went up to the ridge of the hill country, saying, 'Here we are, we have indeed sinned, but we will go up to the place where the Lord has promised.' But Moses said, 'Why then are you transgressing the commandment of the Lord when it will not succeed?'" Isn't that interesting? God told him to go up into the promised land. "No, we're not going to go. We're too scared." Now he says, "Okay, it's too late. Amalekites and Canaanites are up there in the valleys, so now you need to double back and go back down toward the Red Sea." And now they say, no, we're going to go up. We're going to go to the promised land. So they've got it backwards both times. Now they mourn greatly, the people did in verse 39, but they weren't mourning because of their sin, as John Gill points out. They were mourning because of their circumstances, which were not good. They're just told they were going to die and their corpses were going to fall in the wilderness. "Now they rose up early and went up to the ridge of the hill country, right to the edge where the bad guys are." And this was a bad decision because not only was God not with them, he was against them, as the NIV Study Bible says. They struck out twice. They didn't move when they were supposed to move, and they moved when they weren't supposed to move. Now this hill country, as I've said before, is just north of the wilderness of Paran. It's north of the wilderness of Paran and the south of the wilderness of Zin. Paran is the wilderness right to the north of the wilderness of Sinai, right there at the tip of the Gulf of Eilat to the west, going up halfway up in the Arab Valley there, Arabia Petra, before you get to the southern end of the Dead Sea. That first half is Paran, then the top half there is the wilderness of Zin. This is where the spies had been sent out from, Numbers 13:3. So Moses sent them from the wilderness of Paran. And so that's where they are now, and so they go from Paran, they want to go on up into Zin and get themselves killed. They wanted to go to the hills whose southern end dipped into the wilderness of Zin. Moses says in verse 41, "Why then are you transgressing the commandment of the Lord Which commandment is he talking about? He's talking about the commandment to turn back into the wilderness and double back. Numbers 14:25. Now the Amalekites and the Canaanites live in the valleys. Turn tomorrow and set out to the wilderness by the way of the Red Sea. We go now to Numbers 14:42-45, and we'll finish this chapter. Do not go up. In other words, don't go up into the wilderness of Zin, to the hill country where the bad guys are. Do not go up, Moses said, or you will be struck down before your enemies, for the Lord is not among you. For the Amalekites and the Canaanites will be there in front of you, and you will fall by the sword, inasmuch as you have turned back from following the Lord, and the Lord will not be with you. But they went up heedlessly to the ridge of the hill country. Neither the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord nor Moses left the camp. So they went up alone, without Moses and without the Ark. Then the Amalekites, there's an object lesson there, then the Amalekites and the Canaanites who lived in that hill country came down and struck them and beat them down as far as Hormah. Okay, so John Gill says they left without the Ark, they left without the Shekinah glory. Obviously, no pillar of cloud, no pillar of fire. They went up on their own in their own flesh and got wiped out. Easy to give an object lesson to that, is it not? Now, Hormah is well named. In fact, it might have been named because of what happened here. It means destruction in the Hebrew. If you look on the map here, it's right there at the southern end of the wilderness of Zin, right before the mountains, it's desert, right before the hill country starts popping up, because they didn't get into the hill country. They were destroyed, and so that's why the place is named Hormah. All right, so the Israelites have been thinned out a little bit. We finished chapter 14, Numbers 14, and now we are prepared to go to Numbers 15:1-31. And we're going to go back into some Leviticus-type stuff. Laws about sacrifices and unintentional sins. This will buttress what we learned in Leviticus. I thought we were through with Leviticus, but unfortunately, we've got to go back and pick it up. But because we have such a good background from having gone through Leviticus, hopefully it will not be too difficult. So I will see you next time if you choose to stay with me, and I hope you enjoyed this video. This audio.